Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name is Michael Fernandez.
And welcome back to another episode of What Makes It Great. Today, we are talking about a movie from 1951 that was ranked number 45 on the original list and number 47 on the updated anniversary list. That is A Streetcar Named Desire, directed by Elia Kazan.
Who?
Elia Kazan. One of the people I will be talking about.
Elia Martel.
Are you familiar with the actress Zoe Kazan?
No, but I know Elia Martel.
Game of Thrones?
From Dorne.
Oh, yeah. Sand Viper.
No, who are you talking about?
Well, Elia Kazan. We'll go ahead and dive right into who Elia Kazan is.
Who's the one you brought up before I made the dumb joke?
Zoe Kazan.
Yeah, who's that?
She's an actress. She does a lot of indie movies. You probably recognize her face if you saw her. She does a lot of really good, inventive, like romantic comedies. I can think of Ruby Sparks, if you've seen that, or What If. Those are both great movies that she's in. I think she's also a screenwriter.
Oh, is she the new girl?
She kind of looks like Zooey Deschanel because she's got big kind of doe eyes.
Okay, anyways. Elia Kazan, the director of this movie.
Yes, that's his granddaughter. So a little bit of Hollywood royalty. He has an interesting story. Born in Istanbul in 1909, and he's one of the more famous directors on Broadway and for films. He worked with the Actors Studio in New York and helped bring a sense of natural realism to performances. He directed this movie, A Streetcar Named Desire. He also directed another movie with Marlon Brando, who is one of the main stars of this movie, called Viva Zapata. And On the Waterfront, all with Marlon Brando. He also did East of Eden with James Dean.
Oh, he did On the Waterfront, so we'll see him again.
Mm-hmm. And the other big thing about him is that in 1952, he testified in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee and named names of suspected communists. He claims that they already knew all of those people. And he wasn't naming anybody new, but he was kind of called a traitor for it in Hollywood, and so a lot of people kind of abandoned him after that. In 1999, he wins an honorary Academy Award for lifetime achievement, and the crowd was kind of split in applauding and some refusing to applaud him. So he's got a little bit of infamous notoriety. That's the word I'm looking for. And he dies at the age of 94 in 2003. Nominated for 7 Academy Awards, wins 2 for Best Director for a movie called The Gentleman's Agreement in 1947 and On the Waterfront in 1954.
Huh. So we'll see more of this Elia guy.
Mm-hmm. One more time, I believe. And we'll see the next guy a couple more times, Marlon Brando. He is the lead actor in this movie. He was born in Nebraska in 1924 to an alcoholic mother and disapproving father who never thought he would amount to anything. Did he prove him wrong? He went to New York to study acting because it was the only thing in high school that he ever really enjoyed. He was in a play in high school and he's like, yeah, I'll do that. And goes to the Actors Studio in New York where he meets Stella Adler and trains with her and a famous acting coach.
He met somebody named Stella before this movie?
Yeah. Hey, Stella! Yeah. Talk about serendipity.
Yeah, you probably practiced that line and saying that all the time.
Right. That's why it comes off so well in this movie. And Elia Kazan, who is teaching actors there as well. And he is he's probably the biggest name actor who's credited with bringing a more naturalistic, realistic approach to his roles and to his acting.
And he's super, super young in this. How old?
I think he was 27 years old when this movie came out.
I guess relative to the only other thing that I've seen him on the waterfront, but relative to The Godfather, he's very, very young.
Well, in The Godfather, he's like
dressed up as to be older than he is. Yeah.
Yeah. He's 47, 48,
so
something like
years
that.
Later. Yeah. Still, though, he looks very young and handsome, and he's like a good-looking dude. And this is his first movie, yeah?
Yeah, this is his breakthrough. I think he was in a few smaller roles, but this is his big breakthrough role, and he originated the role on Broadway. This was originally a play by Tennessee Williams, a famous playwright, and comes over to the film, and a lot of the cast in this movie is the original Broadway cast, with the exception of Vivian Leigh. She was on the West End. She was in the original West End cast, which is London's Broadway. He also becomes a pop culture icon in a movie called The Wild One in 1953, where he basically popularizes the look of black leather jackets and blue jeans, which you will see in all 50s and early 60s attire forever and ever, inspiring Elvis Presley and so many others. Huh. It all kind of started with Marlon Brando in that movie. He reunites with Elia Kazan for On the Waterfront in 1954, continues to have success through the 50s, and in the 60s, his career takes a really big downturn. By the end of the 60s, he was considered really difficult to work with and would not make any money if he was in the movie. And then Francis Ford Coppola insists and gets him hired to star in The Godfather in 1972, which revives his career and earns him his second Oscar. He has another hit that year with a movie called Last Tango in Paris, and then goes on to play a bunch of smaller roles in a number of films, including Superman in 1978 and Apocalypse Now at the end of the 70s. He is nominated for a total of 8 Academy Awards and wins 2, one for On the Waterfront and one for The Godfather. AFI ranks him as the 4th best actor of the classic era. He was also really involved with the civil rights movement, and he was at the March on Washington, and had a big reputation for being really difficult to work with and having a big ego, and he rarely memorized his lines and would often have them taped on cue cards off camera. And then, like, later on in his life, he gained a lot of weight and dies in 2004 at the age of 80 years of age. At the age of 80 years of age.
Oh, nice. Nice age of age.
Yes.
But wow, he's only 80? I didn't know.
Yeah, one of the more famous actors I think we will discuss on our list, and glad we get to see him a couple more times on the list, because while I appreciate this movie, I didn't really enjoy it too much watching it. So
yeah, me either, spoiler alert. But we forgot to talk about where and when and yeah. how we watched it.
This movie is on HBO Max, so that's where I watched it. This is my first time watching it, too. I had no idea. I never read the play, never saw the play, never seen any this movie ever, so I had no idea what to expect.
I think I had to read this book in, like, ninth grade GT English, and I don't really remember it very well then, mm-hmm. and I don't really remember it very well now after watching it, which is bad.
There's some controversial subject matter in this one.
I watched it a week ago, and yeah, HBO Max, like you were talking about, and yeah, sure, controversial subject matter, just like chalked it up to like an old 50s. It was what, written in like the 30s or something?
I think so.
Just drama, 40, social 30, drama, 40s, yeah. dumb. I don't know. It wasn't very... like, the bad stuff that you're talking about, it's not like anything that we haven't seen already. But it's just a, yeah, social drama.
Yeah. Well, you ready to talk about the movie a little bit?
Yeah, but first, yeah, you brushed over... I mean, you just said that Vivien Leigh's in it. And
yeah.
Vivien Leigh's back. It's been like over a decade since we've seen her.
And Gone with the Wind.
And she is still a very, very good actress. I still think she looks just like Natalie Dormer from Game of Thrones. Hey, Ilya Martel, Game of Thrones, Natalie Dormer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she's, I think, the most interesting character. I think that, yeah, when we get into it, I'll hopefully have some scenes that I may remember. We'll be like, oh yeah, that's right, that was a good part. But yeah, we'll see. Her and Brando were the two that I was focusing on. I didn't really do any background info or research on Elia or Tennessee Williams, although his name is great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's get into the movie.
Sure. So it opens up in New Orleans, and Blanche DuBois, played by Vivien Leigh, our main character for this movie, arrives in New Orleans and boards a streetcar, like a little street trolley or a tram or something that's named Desire. And that's what takes her into the city and to her sister's house. Her sister is Stella Kowalski, and she's played by an actress named Kim Hunter. So the movie's called A Streetcar Named Desire. There's a line later on where it's like, have you ever ridden on the streetcar named Desire or something? It's kind of like, I think it's like a sexual innuendo kind of a thing. But I don't really know. I didn't dive too much into this movie. I don't know the role of desire or the theme of desire in this movie, but it has something to do with, I don't know, the complications around maybe romance or love and how it messes up our feelings or our, I don't know, our, I don't know, clouds our judgment maybe. Blanche is not in a good place and she's out of place. And as she arrives in New Orleans and she gets to her sister's house, she's not there. She goes over to her bowling alley because that's where her sister Stella and her husband Stanley are. And her sister warmly greets her and kind of gives her a little bit of background of information of what she's doing in the city. She says she was a high school teacher and she left because she was on the verge of lunacy. Her nerves broke, and so she resigned, and now is spending some time there.
Medically, that's how the nerves, that's how they work.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
They break.
Yeah.
It's like bones.
Yeah, she was having some, yeah, they're just snap. She has a cast on her nerves, and her nerves are in a sling, too. So
she was crazy and gone with the wind, but reasonably so, and in this one we don't get the full picture, I don't think, or I didn't feel, of like her craziness. I mean, we get it like later on sprinkled mm-hmm. throughout, but it just mm-hmm. wasn't quite as clear. But she's good. Vivien Leigh's good at playing a crazy person.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about the house, her sister's house, where most of the film takes place, mm-hmm. and like right when she shows up at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of feels like New Orleans, it kind of loosely, but mm-hmm. it mostly feels like a play. It feels like a.
Mm-hmm.
Broadway set,
and the whole play apparently takes place within the apartment.
Yeah, which makes sense. There's like people all around, like super super close. Like there's a bunch of people just like stacked all around. It seems like all these apartments and all these homes are like all in this same super small building. And then there's like one other place I think with like the stairs they go to, but
right.
It's really impressive looking. It looks really cool. It's really stylized, and I did like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely has a feel. Like it, I've never been to New Orleans, but it's got this kind of swampy, kind of atmospheric look to it in the movie, and it's pretty effective for me at least. And we also then they go back to the house, and we meet Stanley Kowalski, played by Marlon Brando. He is, like, as you said before, super good looking, super masculine, very built. And he's got, like, a super tight t-shirt on. And he's chewing gum and acting all casual and toned down and realistic.
You must be Stanley. I'm Blanche.
Oh, you're still sister.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Yeah, where's the little woman?
In the bathroom.
Oh. Well, where are you from, Blanche?
I live in Oriel.
Oriel. Oriel, huh? Oh, yeah, that's right. Oriel, that's not my territory.
And contrasting that with Vivien Leigh's performance, where she's very, like, affected and, you know, kind of more classical in her acting style, the dichotomy of the natural realism of the laid-back, gum-chewing Marlon Brando and the Vivien Leigh, it really does kind of highlight her character of, like, her nerves breaking and, you know, on the verge of lunacy and all those things. Very similar dichotomy to the Sunset Boulevard one.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas the Sunset Boulevard one was done for a little bit more of, like, satiric effect, this one seems to be done for a lot more dramatic effect, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
There's also some flirting, because, like, he takes his shirt off, and she's looking, like, kind of attracted to him, and so maybe there's something with the desire there, and that's kind of some things that kind of cloud judgment later on. But there's already conflict between Stanley and Blanche really early on. Blanche's stuff gets brought in, and he's, like, demanding to see the papers of the sale of their family estate because he thinks that she's there to swindle them,
Oh, he's got some rule, the Napoleon rule.
Yeah, the Napoleonic code.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Wait, now listen, did you ever hear of the Napoleonic code, Star?
No, Stanley, I haven't heard of the Napoleonic code.
All right, okay, then just let me enlighten you on a point or two.
Yes?
Now, we got here in the state of Louisiana what's known as the Napoleonic code. You see, now, according to which that what belongs to the wife belongs to the husband also, and vice versa. Will you listen? Now, like, take, for instance, I had that piece of property.
My head is swimming.
All right, then. Okay. We'll wait till she's through soaking the hot tub, and then I'm going to inquire if she is acquainted with Napoleonic code.
Stanley, don't be so silly.
It looks to me like you've been swindled, baby. And when you get swindled on Napoleonic code, I get swindled too. And I don't like to get swindled.
So he's very, very kind of protective of his property, of his stuff, and doesn't want this outsider coming in and invading his space. And he's not afraid to have confrontation. Whereas Stella and Blanche are a little, they dance around each other a little bit more. Stanley's just going to go, I don't care. I'm going to go yell at her and get the information I need, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of happens throughout the movie. We also learn that Stella's pregnant. Yeah. And Blanche congratulates her sister. And then we cut to a poker game where Stanley and his friends are there. And we meet another character, Mitch, played by Carl Malden, who's another Actors Studio guy. He's going to also appear on the waterfront later on. And Blanche and Mitch hit it off. They're flirting and connecting, and then a drunk Stanley gets really pissed off and storms in, and they were like dancing to some song on the radio, and he throws it out the window. And he's like in this burst of rage, and Stella intervenes, and then he takes her outside and starts smacking her. It's really graphic. It happens. He like goes out the door frame, pushes her up against the wall so she's hidden behind the door frame, and we see him like closed fist swinging at her.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really terrible. And then so they kind of, Eunice is their upstairs neighbor, and she takes in Stella and Blanche to be away from Stanley while all of his friends like throw him in the shower to get him sobered up or something. And this is the iconic moment of the movie where he comes out, you know, shirt torn from his friends grabbing him, and he's covered in water from being tossed into the shower trying to sober up, and he's yelling,
"Hey, Stella! Hey, Stella!"
Pretty iconic.
The way that I always saw that scene, I always thought it was this image of like masculinity but vulnerable masculinity. And when I actually watched the movie, and now that I understand the context of it, it's all about toxic masculinity, and this is domestic abuse. And we see Stella upstairs as you're hearing his screams outside, and she looks so conflicted. And it's such a realistic moment of what an abusive relationship can look like, that kind of like almost a Stockholm syndrome aspect of it, that just keep going back for more. Yeah. And yeah, this is not an image. And everyone, like on all these comments and everything about this movie, it's always like, Marlon Brando, what a man's man, that he just looks so sexy in this movie, and sure, he looks good, but his character is an alcoholic, abusive, manipulative, and as we see later on in the movie, rapist. Like he has like no redeeming qualities to him except that he looks good.
So I
was super confused watching this movie why his character is like idealized, it seemed like to me. And maybe it's not. Maybe it was all just like some idea that I had built up in my head just from seeing some images from this movie. But yikes, this guy is bad news bears.
Yeah. Yeah, he no good.
Yeah. I was like, Stella's kind of thrilled by Stanley's behavior, I think. Oh, yeah, that's because it's the next scene. She goes back down, they kiss and go off to make up. He carries her into the bedroom. And the next day, I think, Stanley's gone off to repair the radio he broke, and Blanche is talking with Stella, and Blanche is kind of urging Stella to leave him. But Stella kind of reports being kind of thrilled by his behavior. And I put it down in my notes, like, there's something kind of forward-thinking and yet naive and stuck in the past about Blanche in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also this sense of hopefulness and naivety from Stella as well. They're both kind of not seeing the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stuck in their own ways. But it's such an interesting dynamic, that scene, I think, after... And I think there's a moment where, like, Stanley's walking back and he kind of overhears some of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's just bad news bears, this whole situation.
Yeah.
Stanley later is growing more and more suspicious of Blanche. He accuses her of hanging around a hotel back in her hometown. And I was like, is he implying that she's a hooker? Or what is going on here? And we slowly kind of get some more hints about Blanche's past. Like, later on, a young, like, boy, high school age kid comes to, like, collect some money for a local paper, and Blanche flirts with him and kisses him on the lips.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I missed that.
It's super awkward. And later on, all these things happen, and it's revealed later on that Blanche gets run out of town because she was having a bunch of relationships with men. And eventually she had one with a 17-year-old student of hers.
Mm.
And that's why she can't go back there. She got fired and got chased out of town, basically. Mm. And she blames it on her struggles dealing with the grief of what she was, like, one of her boyfriends. And I think in the play I was reading, it's her husband, but she kept saying it was a boy that she loved.
Mm-hmm.
Who she kind of insulted, and he ran off and shot himself, and she's dealing with the grief and the loss of that and the guilt around that.
Mm-hmm.
In the play, I think that her husband was, like, a closeted homosexual.
Oh, wow.
And there was and then, like, she outed him or something, and that's why he kills himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of controversial subject matter, especially for the time, that in this story, but all of that to say is that she's got some guilt and some grief and some hurt that she's getting some terrible coping mechanisms to try to handle with it.
Mm.
And is not ever fully over it. The other thing is that she starts to have a relationship with Mitch, Stanley's friend, played by Carl Malden.
Yep.
And he's kind of awkward, and she's kind of awkward, and she kind of implies,
perfect.
Yeah, they work pretty well together. And she's like, he tries to, like, have sex with her at one point, and she's like, no. And she, like, hints that she wants to be married first. And so she's ready to, or he's ready to, like, get engaged to her. And then the next thing we see is Mitch and Stanley at work, and they're fighting and yelling. And it's because Stanley has found all this out about Blanche and has told him. And so now Mitch doesn't want anything to do with her.
It's hilarious. I missed a lot of this.
Yeah, it's kind of heavy.
Yeah.
And this culminates with Stanley going back and telling Blanche that he's found all this about her, and he's told Mitch all about it. And she kind of has an anxiety attack, and like, I think he pushes her down on a bed and is yelling and laughing in her face, and it gets really, really intense. And then they kind of soften. Oh, because Stella's there, and Stella and Stanley are fighting about it, and they get super intense again. And Stella asks to be taken to the hospital because she's going into labor.
Oh, yeah, the baby.
Yeah. And then Blanche is alone in the house, and Mitch comes back because it's going to be a little while before the baby comes, and so they're there by themselves, and there's a he oh Mitch comes by sorry not Stanley Mitch comes by, and he's like, I thought you were straight. And she's like, a line can be straight, a street, not a heart. And he like gets really angry in her face, and he shines a light on her face.
What did you want to do that for? so that I can take a look at you good and plain.
Of course, you don't really mean to be insulting.
No, just realistic.
I don't want realism. I want magic.
Magic.
Yes, yes, magic. I try to give that to people. I do misrepresent things. I don't tell truth. I tell what ought to be truth. And if that is sinful, then let me be punished for it. Don't turn the light on.
Like, let me see. And he finally sees, like, how old she is what he says. But really, it's just, like, he sees the truth of who she is. And he hadn't seen it before.
A mean way to say I see the truth.
Yeah. You're like, look at these wrinkles. I'm like, dude, you got no hair on your head. Like, calm down. You're no spring chicken or whatever. Yeah, and so he refuses to marry her, saying she's not clean enough. And she screams at him until he runs off. And
oh, yeah, she screams a lot.
Yeah.
This scene, okay, so I was talking about the house.
Mm-hmm.
This scene, she's, like, screaming and screaming and screaming, and then, like, all the neighbors, like, live right, like, 10 mm-hmm. feet away, mm-hmm. 10 feet above, 10, like, every... You know, she's just surrounded by so many people, and she, like, runs outside and screams at him, and he mm-hmm. runs away, and then all of these people are looking at her and everything.
Yeah.
And a police officer starts coming down the street, mm-hmm. and she goes back into the house, and she closes the blinds, but they're, like, wooden Venetian blinds, kind yeah. of, you know, with, like, holes in them, you know, like, you know, you can see in them, and she's, like, I don't know. It just seemed like very, very thin walls and mm-hmm. thin blinds, and... And somehow she's like, I'm not home. And she, like, hides from the cop and just,
yeah,
I don't know. It just seemed very, like, a not very secure home. And maybe that's the vibe and the intent of the, you know, the set and everything. But I was just like, man, this is, like, if this was New Orleans, like, now, it'd just be, like, the most dangerous house in the world. Like, everybody would be breaking into it. And, like, all these drunk people off the street would just be, you know, looking into your home. And, like, I would want some blinds and some windows and some... Yeah.
Well, and that's maybe part of that is intentional, because the whole thing is she's trying to keep all these secrets and everyone keeps finding everything out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she thinks that she has this great facade and mask that she's wearing, but it's so easily seen through by everybody.
Yeah.
And that when that police officer comes and checks on her, she's just kind of slowly whispering to herself, I'll be good. I'll be good. And the next thing we see her, she's like in a fancy dress and jewelry, kind of talking to herself. And fantasizing in this own in her dream world, kind of maybe to escape or something. And Stanley comes and saying that Stella's in labor, but the baby won't arrive until tomorrow. So he came home to sleep. And Blanche has made up a story that an old boyfriend has invited her on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually Stanley kind of gets fed up with her lies and pushes her down on the bed and yells and laughs in her face.
You know, I've been on to you from the start. And not once did you pull the wool over this boy's eyes. You come in here and you sprinkle a place with powder and you spray perfume and you stick a paper lantern over the light bulb. And lo and behold, the place is turning to Egypt. And you are the queen of the Nile, sitting on your throne, swilling down my liquor. And you know what I say? Ha-ha! You hear me? Ha-ha-ha!
She tries to leave and he won't let her get out of the house. And he corners her in her room. She breaks a bottle. He grabs her and smashes the bottle against a mirror, and her reflection becomes fractured.
Mm-hmm.
And we're led to believe that Stanley rapes her.
Mm-hmm.
It is super disturbing. And I think that the mirror reflection being fractured is that she has been broken by Stanley completely in this moment.
Mm.
And she's kind of beyond repair at this stage.
Yeah.
It's a real big violation, and I was shocked that it was in this movie. And it really is a really, really basically unfortunate end for Blanche.
Yeah. She was already going spiraling out of control, and he just was fed up. He was just like, oh, yeah, some boyfriend, huh? You're going to go on some trip, huh? Some cruise mm-hmm. or something like that? And I think he was drinking, too, when he came back. He,
oh, yeah.
Had a beer or of something course. Or a shot. I don't know. Because
he was celebrating.
Had. Yeah, his unborn child.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
And that, that is a terrible, like, exclamation point on the terrible character that Stanley is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you thought his behavior was excusable before, he just totally breaks this woman.
Mm.
And I think if it weren't for the ending of this movie, he probably would have gone on, if he hadn't already, he would have gone on to completely break Stella too. But the next scene is the final scene of the movie. Stanley and his friends are playing poker while Stella is back home taking care of her new baby, and Blanche is in bad shape, keeping to her room. She's not eating. She's looking down and away. She's not looking anybody in the eyes. It's, you can tell that some Stanley did something really bad to her. And Stella and Eunice are talking to each other. Eunice is their upstairs neighbor, and it sounds like Blanche told Stella what had happened, but Eunice advises Stella to not believe her and keep on living. Like, that's how you survive this situation, is you can't believe that that is the truth, or else you're not going to make it out of this situation, basically. It's a really, really terrible thing, but also probably a very realistic choice that a lot of people have had to make. And I thought that was super sad and super just like, it felt real to me. Blanche is still going on about this cruise that she's going on, and Stella and Eunice are packing her things. Blanche hears Stanley and Mitch talking during their poker game, and she gets mad that he's still there. I think this is like a moment where she kind of, for a second, goes against her sister and is like, I told you what he did to me, and you're still in this? Like, you're still okay with him being around and you being around him. And if it weren't for that moment, maybe Stella doesn't have the courage to do what she does in a few minutes here. But some men arrive for Blanche, and they're waiting outside the house. They pretend it's that old beau of hers from Dallas to take her on the cruise, but it's people taking her to be committed to a mental hospital. She starts hearing voices and echoes and kind of refuses to go. It's a kind of neat little effect that they do with the sound design of the movie. All you hear voices of the characters talking, and they're kind of echoing throughout as if you're inside her, Blanche's head. And she kind of refuses to go and falls to the floor moaning. Mitch accuses Stanley of doing this to her, and he's like, I never touched her. But Mitch kind of is coming around to be back to supporting Blanche again. And the man, I think as a doctor, is able to kind of calm her down and get her up off the floor. He offers his arm, and she smiles and takes it and says another one of the famous lines of the movie.
Whoever you are, I've always depended on the kindness of strangers.
And the line, strangers, is, I think, a callback to earlier in the movie when they're talking about how she was keeping the company of strangers back in her hometown. So there's a little bit of a double meaning, I think, to that. Finally, they walk out with her staring at him, and Mitch looks on. Stella goes after her. Stanley stops her, and she tells him to never touch her again. The car drives away with Blanche and goes around the corner, and Stella picks up the crying baby and goes upstairs to Eunice's as Stanley starts yelling.
Going back in there again, not this time. Never going back, never.
Hey, Stella! Hey, Stella!
And that's the end of A Streetcar Named Desire. I wonder if it continues, if she goes back down or not.
I hope not.
I really hope not, but probably does. Yeah. Like, the cynic in me, I guess, would say that she probably does, but the way that the movie ends, it tries to end on a hopeful note. And I think that was probably something the production code probably insisted, because I think it's a different ending from the play. I don't remember how the play ends. But, yikes. So, it's one of the biggest hits of the year. It gets nominated for 12 Academy Awards.
Wow.
Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for Brando, Best Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Score, and Best Sound. It wins 4. For Best Lead Actress for Vivien Leigh, Best Supporting Actress for Kim Hunter, who plays Stella, Best Supporting Actor for Carl Malden, who played Mitch, and Best Art Direction. Apparently, it's only 2 movies to win 3 out of the 4 acting awards. The only one it loses is Marlon Brando.
Which he, I thought, should have
right.
been in. If any of the others, like him and then Stella, were probably the best.
Yeah. The other movie is Network in 1976, which I've never seen, but it's on the list. So, American Film Institute has it at number 45 and number 47. It has it at number 67 on the Passions list. Their score is ranked number 19, and it has two quotes. The number 75 quote, "The I've always depended on the kindness of strangers," and number 45 of "Hey, Stella."
I think that's pretty high, 45 and 47, personally.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I mean, for me, this film is great just because of the four main actors. Mm-hmm. The introduction of Brando, yeah, he's great. And I normally would have the, you know, guts to try to do an impersonation, but I just can't even do, I'll say that for like The Godfather or something.
Right.
But I was impressed that his voice didn't really change too much.
Yeah, he sounds a lot like he does in The Godfather.
He kind of just talks like that. But... yeah, I don't know. Overall, like this story is not my favorite story. It's not a happy story. It doesn't have like a clear cut resolve, and it's, you know, it's not even a resolve that I'm too happy about, where Blanche goes off
mm-hmm.
to the mental hospital,
mm-hmm.
and then yeah, Stella, her sister's probably stuck with this evil guy.
But we hope she gets away.
Yeah, oh, hope is there. I guess that's true. There's a little bit of hope at the end, but mm-hmm. not enough for it to be that high, I feel. I mean, it's, you know, it's obviously, it's well-written. It's a period drama. If I had to study it in school back in the day, now it makes sense. It's a classic story and everything. Well-written. It was just mostly well-acted. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to say, like, there was any, you know, there wasn't any like intense camera movement or editing tricks. I mean, the audio editing at the end with the voices in her head.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting, I guess, was pretty cool in mm-hmm. some scenes in the house, because the house was pretty shadowed.
Mm-hmm.
And the set was great, but I think it was the same set or very, very similar set to the Broadway play.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, it had a lot of good parts, and I can definitely see it's enjoyable. And the Stella line is very, very quotable.
Yeah.
But overall, good film. Not my fave so far.
Yeah. I would agree with pretty much everything. I think it's probably so high on the list because, in a similar way to A Place in the Sun, it kind of heralds a change in the acting style of Hollywood. But Marlon Brando is a much bigger cultural figure than Montgomery Clift.
Oh, definitely.
And so I think maybe that's why it has the lasting... staying power, and the kind of recognition that it has is that it's also the breakthrough film for him. But yeah, the realistic acting, I love the shift in the acting style to something a little bit more modern. I was looking through a bunch of clips on YouTube afterwards to kind of refresh my memory, and some of the comments were like, it looked like he was starring in a movie from the 40s, but it was, he was an actor plucked from the 90s or something.
Yeah,
and okay. I could see that. It was kind of this big shift in the way that acting is done, so I can appreciate it for that. I also appreciate that they were willing to go into some touch on some controversial subject matter, much like A Place in the Sun. So it's similar in those aspects to A Place in the Sun, but I think I enjoyed A Place in the Sun more.
Same.
Like I mentioned before, Brando's realism mixed with Vivien Leigh's affected kind of performance provides a similar dichotomy to Sunset Boulevard, but more tragic and less creepy than Sunset Boulevard. But I think I liked Sunset Boulevard's thing more
mm-hmm.
Than this movie. So it feels like it's doing some things that other movies that we've talked about, and maybe in some respects doing them a little bit better, but I enjoyed the other ones, the other movies that I saw them in more than this.
Yeah, same.
So maybe it makes my list by the end of this, but it'll be kind of near the bottom, I think, overall.
Agreed.
All right. That is A Streetcar Named Desire.
What are we talking about next week, brother?
Yeah, next time. Let me pull it up.
I think I know what we're talking about. I think we're talking about our first Gene Kelly movie.
That's right. 1951's An American in Paris.
Same year? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, same year. Back to color, I think.
Cool. It's been a while.
It has been a long while. I was trying to think of what the last movie we saw in color was.
No, I don't know.
It would have... I'm going back and it's... I think it was either Fantasia, if you count that, or Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, I think it might have been. The live action. Yeah, Gone with the Wind.
That's insane. But yeah, that was ranked... American in Paris is ranked number 68 on the original list, and it fell off all the way. It's not ranked on the 10th anniversary update.
Hmm.
I've never seen it, so I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, help us share it with your friends and family if you're enjoying the podcast. But my name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name's Michael Fernandez. Thank you guys for joining us on What Makes It Great.